This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards. And this evening, as usual, we are going to have ourselves a wonderful and dynamic conversation. We are going to speak firstly with a guest who I have. We're going to be talking about a very important day and a very important group right here in the Bahamas. Then after that, we will take a little bit of a look at some of the news items, and then we can just chit-chat about anything. If you want to join us this evening, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796, 422-GR96. And so, you know, we want you to be a part of this conversation. We want you to sit back and kind of relax in the first 30 minutes or so as we get through with the interview of our very, very important guest. And then we will come right back into our usual conversation. See some interesting things in the newspaper today. We'll talk about that before we go into any deeper conversation later. We see the Prime Minister saying some things, Member of Parliament Thompson saying some things. We see a number of individuals who have been named to the Queen's Honours and $4.2 billion in hurricane damage. That's really almost about about a third of what our total national debt is. But before we do that, we have on our live line none other than Mr. Donald DeMeritt. Donald DeMeritt, welcome to The Essentials.
Hi, Hubert. It's certainly a pleasure being here.
Yes.
Thank you for the invitation.
Certainly always a pleasure to engage with you. I'm always mindful of the privilege that I have to, from time to time, engage with bright minds right here in the Bahamas, whether it's through radio or other means. And you're certainly one of those individuals who always cause us to think. But we're here to discuss something very, very important this evening. Talk to us about what exactly is it that you represent today and why we need to talk about these things.
Well, Hubert, today actually is the day of reflection for me. And today is the day that as management consultants, as you're aware, consultants around the world, we celebrate International Consultants Day. This is actually only the 18th year that we've observed International Consultants Day. It's observed by UNESCO, by the UN, and it's observed around the world. It's observed the first Thursday in every June. So annually, the first Thursday in the month of June is International Consultants Day. So the day, an observation of this, our consultant colleagues from the group that we're members of, namely the Caribbean Institute of Management Consultants, and globally the International Council of Management Consulting Institutes, or CMC Global, mm-hmm. represented in 55 countries across the world as such. The day we observe, the day we applaud our business partners, stakeholders, but most importantly, the clients that we serve. Mm-hmm. And so today in celebration, all of the institutes globally have had some sort of formal celebration, if you may, by way of discussion panels, group panels, some different informal things. Here in the Caribbean, we've had a session that was actually held 1 o'clock this afternoon. And we had guest speakers from the UN, an assistant secretary general. We had a former executive from the IADB, Dr. Claire Nelson. We had a colleague out of Africa who spoke as well too. And one of our Caribbean luminaries as well too spoke as well too. And so it was very informative. We spoke about the need for us to begin to engage the now generation, because that's where all of the action really should be as such. We should be the stage in our development where we are basically sharing knowledge, passing on knowledge, giving some gems of wisdom, if that is what we have as such, and just celebrating the youth do their thing. So it is a good day for me. And as I think about what we've achieved in the Caribbean, I'm still very pensive, and I'm very, very sad, because I think that we could and we should be doing much more here in the Bahamas. And so that's the length and the breadth and the width of my day. Mm-hmm. Just a celebration of life, first and foremost, a celebration of all the opportunities that we've had opportunities to embrace, and everything that we've shared together. And so it's not being sad, but there are some things that we would like to actually change and improve as we move forward.
Yeah, so we'll come back to that. But why is it important to carve out this particular day, or not this, but carve out a particular day for consultants? These are individuals who are out there, they're running their own business. But in terms of consultant, management consultant, persons who are doing, bringing solution to clients across different business arena, why are they so important to society? Why are they important to a country, a region?
Well, whether we like it or not, we are actually among that group of professionals who are identified as thought leaders. And thought leaders, as opposed to, and I don't want to use this term, being counters, because you are both a CPA and also you are a management consultant as well too, right? But it's our job to actually help to forge and advance change and help our clients prepare and embrace the future, embrace the now as such. And it's upon us, it's incumbent upon us to take innovation to another level as such. And we know that here in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean as such, we've not been pushing the envelope as we should, because the opportunities abound. And so for me, this really pause and reflect and celebration is one where you actually begin to reset and you move the dial forward for another year, for another decade as such, right? And so it's one where you actually strategize and then act. Mm-hmm. As opposed to being reactive, we must continue to be proactive.
Right.
And this day is a reminder of just that.
Yeah.
It's a reminder, if you may, of all of the opportunities, particularly in this new paradigm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because now we're talking about a paradigm shift, that happened so rapidly over the past 2 years. But everybody is still really catching their breaths. We've been talking about this and preparing for this from 2015, 2017. Mm-hmm. And so as we sit and reflect and we celebrate, as we actually prepare to really move the dial further so that we'll be recognized and uttered in the same breath, if you may, as our colleagues in the CPA or the Chartered Accountant arena as such, mm-hmm. it's important for us to realize where we are, what we should be doing, what our contributions are, and to really let the world know, let the Bahamas know that, hey, we're here. We have a network that reaches around the world as such, and we all sing off the same hymn sheet. Mm-hmm. We're here to help innovate, we're here to help embrace, and we're here to help us move towards the future as we grow our economies around the region from strength to strength.
Yeah. You know, as a consultant myself, you mentioned the fact that opportunities abound, but sometimes the reality on the ground does not bear that out, right? I know at a particular level that you are correct, but it's one thing to see the big pie. It's another thing to be able to partake of the pie. And I think that's where the difference is sometimes. So yes, there are huge opportunities, but some persons just, you know, having this difficulty breaking into that arena. And part of the reason why there is that difficulty is because there seemed to be a perception that local professionals, local consultants, sometimes do not have the wherewithal, do not have the necessary skills and know-how, do not have the necessary experience to deliver the type of solution which persons are looking for locally. And so they look outwardly. What would be your take on that?
And you know, Hubert, it's sad, but there is some truism to it. But not just some, but a lot of truism to it as such. And I think that there may be two causes to it as such. One may be the fact that the easiest thing or the easiest normal or misnomer that someone can place against a name is that name of management consultant. And so you have persons around who may have left a bitter taste in many persons' mouths by acting as this or professing to be professional management consultants, credible consultants, and aren't. But then, you know, there's that reality, what we've discussed around the region, and is one that I really hate to embrace, but it's true. A prophet is not without honor. And that is the sad part, you know, because as I reflect today, I had an engagement early April in St. Kitts and Nevis. Mm-hmm. And the reception that you get or that I received from the professionals, from the bureaucrats, from the persons in St. Kitts, it's a far different cry than what a number of our colleagues receive here. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I have some degree of brand or name recognition. And so imagine if there's some persons who don't really know, you catch them rolling their eyes as such because they don't know. Mm-hmm. Imagine how they would act around persons who don't have that name recognition brand that we may have as such. Mm-hmm. And yes, that is something that must be discussed. There's a conversation to be had. Because we can work, we can produce favorably very well in any arena, regionally or globally as such. We have many examples of Bahamian professionals, young and not so young, who are doing, I mean, very, very, very well. And when we travel, we see the names and we interact and so forth and so on. I mean, even in St. Kitts. When I went to St. Kitts, I mean, the Chamber of Commerce guy said, your homeboy is here. Well, I knew he was there. And they're referring to Tommy Thompson. And they're looking at Tommy as their new tourism blue-eyed boy, for want of a better word. Okay? I don't want to say nappy-eyed boy because, you know, there's some connotations there. But a brother, okay? One who I went to high school with and university with, right? They're revering him. And so that is something that we as maybe can, but I think it's more so Bahamians, more so than my colleagues in the Caribbean and such, mm-hmm. who understand achievement and who understand that, hey, that he has something here. So as management consultants, you want that opportunity that speaks to that. Now, that being said, when you hear our governments and governments across the region and the world speaking about sustainable public procurement, if you may, they're talking about that element of the public procurement purse that can be used to engage local professionals, mm-hmm. who have the skill sets and the ready oil, if you may, to produce and to help and have the build an economy as such. Yeah. That's the conversation that needs to be had before it gets too far, because it speaks to not only uplifting the management consulting profession, but speaks to uplifting and opportunities for small and medium businesses as well too.
I think you touch on a very important point, because oftentimes, just reflecting on government will mention individuals within government will mention the need to support small business, the need to support entrepreneurs, the need to support small, medium-sized manufacturing, whatsoever it is. But oftentimes, that conversation kind of gloss over the consultants. It glosses over them without recognizing and acknowledging that all of those categories, entrepreneurship, small and medium-sized, really is categories where consultants fall. And there are also discussions about how do we carve out space? How do we carve out allowances for small and medium-sized entities? But in that same process, you don't get the same consideration, or at least there doesn't appear to be an awareness that local consultants fall within these categories. What would you say?
I would say that you're correct again. But, you know, here's what I've seen over the years, right? And I can say this to you. I really only began to really focus and hone in on this since I left the bank, right? And it's been for a good chunk of change now, because I actually left my banking life behind me. She was almost 20 years ago, right? But when I took on the mantle as the president of the Caribbean Institute of Management Consultants, I'm the immediate past president now as such, right? And I tried to think of something that I could focus on, that I could actually create a legacy, if you may, for myself, if there's such a thing in our profession as such, right? And I really began to focus on enabling legislation for management consultants. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, you know, when you think about it, it's been the better part of maybe 11, 12 years since the CARICOM Secretariat began to push widespread discussion around the region, well, CARICOM including Dominican Republic, about how to roll out enabling legislation for the professional services sector. And I know this is the securest way in answering your question, but I think it was last week, or maybe a week before last, when the Midwives Act or Bill went through. And the midwife is also recognized as a professional. Mm-hmm. So right now, it orders the 13 professional services that is recognized by CARICOM and CARIFORM, the only one without enabling legislation that will put in place the teeth to make certain that we have the same sustained growth and the same protection, not only for the profession, but for stakeholders as well too, is the management consultants.
Yeah, but
that's one gray area where anybody could come in this country and could profess to be a management consultant. He could be an architect. He could be anything in the world. Mm-hmm. And we see hundreds of them sitting around in the various coffee places working away, and we don't know what in the world they're doing. So yes, we are SMEs as well too. And yes, we should be embraced, but there are some other things that should be coupled with that as well too, in that wider conversation.
Yeah, how do we get to that place? How do we get to the place where we have the enabling legislation, like the accountants, like the financial advisors, the CFAs? How do needle on that? So, you know, we have been at this for a while. You know, how do we get to the place where Bahamian consultants, local management consultants, and otherwise, can, through their demonstrated competence, their demonstrated qualification, their demonstrated experience, come together and impress up on the authorities that this is the right thing to do? You know, how do we? Is there a body which is not speaking? How do we solve this?
I'll say it like this. I'll put it to you like this. You know, I've seen a recent example where some of the things that we talked about over the last 8-10 years in the Cabinet Institute. We talked about educating bureaucrats as much as we can. We talk about educating stakeholders, educating government and such, so that when you have in that procurement arena, if you may, persons as opposed to copying and pasting the RFPs and the different things, than what it takes the nation build. They understand that there are acceptable global practices to put certain criteria in place that would actually give that thinking management consultant or give that person pause for thought to say, you know something, it's worth my time leaving this here. I'm pursuing this multi-million dollar engagement, if you may. But until there's some sort of win-win or something that will make a person think that, you know something, I can leave my banking career, I can leave this specific career, and I can go into this consulting arena as a professional and do well and tell those things in place, it won't happen. But Barbados, let's go to Barbados as such, right? We had one of our members actually is a minister there now. And so you click on YouTube, you'll see the Honorable Sandra Husbands speaking about International Consultants Day. We need to begin to encourage and we need to begin to penetrate because persons who understand the cause sitting in those places where decisions are being made, it won't happen. Until we begin to engage the Big Four, the Big Eight firms and such, I mean, at some point, there was some resonance within the Caribbean. I know before the pandemic hit us, where we actually had some accounting firms actually talking about sending new members or new employees to join the CIMC. And so you're talking about really trying to educate and to make the word more sexy than it is, I suppose, because CFA has a good ring, right? CMC, not quite, because you asked what in the world that is. So I think it's a number of things, Hubert.
Yeah, but I really believe that we must at least, first of all, take care of our local space. And so in that regard, I want to ask you, you know, what are the plans? What are the strategies and the, you know, the arrangements which are currently on the drawing board, if there are any, in order to bring together a cohesive and visible group? And I'm not saying that you have a group which is not cohesive. I'm saying that, you know, to have an entity which is highly visible, because this is what is done in the other arenas, in the accountant arena, in the CFA, in the internal auditors, in the compliance arena. How do we get to the place where we have a very visible, vocal, and vibrant entity, which would then, I think, help to better send the message of, well, we are here, we are present, here is who we are, here is what we represent, and kind of this is the support that we are looking to you for. You know, the Compliance Association gets its support because a lot of the requirements are written into the acts or written into regulations. As you know, the accountants have their own set of legislation. How do we get to the place where we enable these very hardworking entrepreneurs, small businesses? You know, I do consulting and it is really, really hard work, you know, sometimes just to get a very small assignment takes a hell of a lot of work, a hell of a lot of networking, a hell of a lot of marketing. And I think there's some help needed in this space.
You know, that being said, one of the things that I did think about today, and I thought, when I said to you I will make the show, because I really, really was having a rough time, as you know. I wasn't feeling well for the past couple of days, but I'm feeling great now, is that I have to dig in again, because we have persons who have committed silently that they will that they're now prepared to have the push. And so we need to begin that conversation like yesterday, and yesterday being this weekend, this week as such, week coming up as such, where we begin to knock on doors. Like I said, right, when I said that we are the last professional services sector or professional services grouping without an enabling legislation, we have a bill that was prepared, Hubert, believe it or me, 9 years ago. 9 years ago. So there was a professional, there's a draft bill that was prepared and signed off by every country in Canada that was signed off on as such. And there were some tricks and there were some tricks around Cabin Expert Agency and CALCOM Secretariat were the enabling bodies there. And they had groups of us meeting around the region, basically tailoring and refining and writing this and making amendments to the draft and so forth and so on. And it's there. And so what we now need is some people who are ready to pound and pound and pound. Now, there's a couple of things here. And I guess everything happens in its time because when I said there's no enabling legislation, it's not the Bahamas only. Throughout the Caribbean period, no Caribbean country has actually taken that step. And so it would be a good thing to tell you why. We've already passed, if you may, we've already upgraded the Financial Management Act. We have a new Statistics Act in place. We have a Public Procurement Act 2021, and they all were passed in 2021. And they all speak to sustainable growth. They all speak to looking through a different lens, if you may, at public procurement, which includes empowering and building up SMEs as such. And they talk about societal benefits, eco benefits, social benefits, if you may, as such. And so it's a thing in the past. Accepted, that is. I wouldn't say it's a thing in the past in reality, but it's accepted globally as such. That there's some things that speaks to you strengthening and building your economy and targeting certain sectors, SMEs and otherwise, okay, to actually get them into the wider discussion and in this nice space where there's so much action going. This is a good starting point. There's no better time than now as such. As that conversation, you have a good platform that you can use to speak because, listen, when you look at procurement, I mean, listen to the budget debate today or this week, and when it's introduced last week, one of the things that you're talking about inside, I mean, pure consultancy dollars, I'm hearing $60 million in consultancy dollars and such. Mm-hmm. Now, how much of that is supposed to be for local consumption? I don't know, I can't speak to it as such, but I know that there's a multiplier effect that says that if 20 million of that or 30 million of that stays here, well, it's multiplied by 20, you're the economist, eh? All right. And so, and I know that there are more ingredients in the pot, I mean, across the divide, because one of the largest procurement items, period, globally on the services side is management consulting services. And it's embedded in almost anything that you do. Yes. And when you look around me and just look at small businesses as such, SMEs, they need services. They need services as such, right? And who best to provide the service, albeit it could be a combination of giving back, but plus a combination of some sort of support as such. And so it could be tied into something else as such, where the innovative mind, the thought leaders can assist with building and growing this arena and such. I was a part of the team that did the need analysis for the small and medium businesses, for the SMEDA Act. And I know what the findings were. And it's high time for us to really begin to walk the walk. The findings spoke specifically governed persons assisting SMEs who were quality persons, eh? Mm-hmm. Not persons who are sporting off theory as such, but persons who were veterans as such, you know? And when I saw the findings as such, when it was analyzed independently, but of the group that did the need analysis as such, it spoke well for the future of small businesses and the future of management consultants in terms of being able to support that and even more. Yeah. So we need to really dig deep. We need to knock on the doors. Make noise, use the platforms that we have. One of our members have one of the most listen, business and talk shows in the country, in the region, that's you. We need a pound and pound and pound and pound. Every door we can find.
Yeah, and I think definitely we have to make a commitment, you know, to be very open and transparent here. I am a member, and I do consulting, and so that is kind of my area of business. That's how I make my living. And I, too, share these concerns, and we have to figure out a way. And, you know, you say there's a draft act, you know, let's find a way, let's take that up, let's dust it off, let's reread it, and let's move. You know, if we don't take the necessary actions, then absolutely nothing will happen. And, you know, 10, 15 years from now, we'll be looking back and have that same conversation. So we want to get to the place where we can really make an impact. And like you said, we have a platform. I am here on the radio. I commit my platform to the effort, because as long as we are having discussions which are designed to move a grouping and consequently to help in nation building, then certainly it's always going to be a great investment. I think we have a caller on the line. Do we have a caller here? Caller, you are on The Essentials. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Hubert Edwards.
Good evening, 52. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm right here going through the struggle.
I expect you to call me on the other side, but, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, and you have a guess, right?
Yes, I have a guess.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, I'm very ignorant in this paradigm, but, you know, I've read the Great COVID-19 and the Great Reset, and I'm always listening and trying to learn. I wish I wasn't so ignorant in the financial construct. Maybe I'd have been better off, but I'm noticing, I had spoken to Shivago Lang a couple of weeks ago, and I had asked, you know, why governments don't invest in gold and silver. He gave a good explanation. But I'm noticing that central banks around the globe are being investing in gold, right? I think that's all. I don't know if it's some other impression, but they've been investing or storing up gold. And then I'm looking at the construct of...
Hey, 52.
Yes, sir.
You won't call me back after when I get into my other section, because I think you have some things we want to discuss.
Yeah, I feel as if I know what's going on. You know?
Yeah, call me back later. Yeah. All right, cool. All right, so definitely we are speaking with Mr. Donald Demerit, who is the immediate past president of the CICMC. He is a ambassador of the Bahamas in many ways, having served throughout the region and having led this organization throughout the region. And I think we, on this day, which is Consultant Day, you know, just wanted to step back and have this conversation, because we really want to get some things moving. We really want to see some momentum. We really want to have persons understand and appreciate that, not because we may not be making pancakes or duff or be doing some things which is tangible or you can actually touch and feel in the first instance. We too are a part of an important part of the local economy. We too need the support. We too have to get to the place where it is easier for us to ply our trade locally. And as Don would have indicated, there are significant allocations from year to year in the budget. The question is, how much of this is local? How much of this remain in the country? How much of it is here to be turned over and to be invested in other areas, so that, you know, when we bring in the velocity of money, when we bring in, you know, our multiplier effect, how much of that is benefiting the country in a significant way? I think it's an area for policymakers to give due consideration to. And just like we carve out spaces for some individual who want to set up a shop or set up a storefront or to start a new business, consideration must be given to management consultants. Consideration must be given to these individuals, because in them, to the core, they are entrepreneurs, they are business owners, they employ individuals. It may be in a different way, it may look non-traditional, but nonetheless, they are great contributors to the growth and the development of the country, and they're contributing to the growth of the GDP. As we close here, Don, you know, what message would you want to leave with the country at large, and would you want to get into the ear of the policymakers, the individuals who can make this change happen, who can help us to transition to the next level?
I would like to leave with this, you know. Over the past 3 years, we've successfully, or it's, in fact, is actually for the past 5 years, or slightly more than that. We've had a proclamation signed every year by the Prime Minister of the country recognizing international consultants. And our proclamation is actually placed on the regional website of CIMC, and it's been signed this year. And I've been actually in a workshop setting in 2 weeks, and it's one is on sustainable public procurement as such. And my eyes have been opened up in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. And so policymakers set a policy. The bureaucrats are the ones that execute as such. But you need the policymakers, the bureaucrats, and we also need the public to be aware of the opportunities that are there and to make certain that there's a champion, a well-placed champion, who is watching over all and sundry, including and especially bureaucrats, because they see a number of things, and a number of things can happen at that level as well, too, to make certain that the message is clear, to make certain that it's pushed, and it's pushed resolutely, because any advancement of management consultants, any advancement of small and medium enterprises in our country only bodes well for our country as such. Management consultants are thought leaders. We have some very, very credible consultants who are on demand and who participate in many consortia efforts around the region and globe. In terms, the message is that we need a champion, and the champion has to come from the top and has to be a consistent message as such, right? These are our own. A prophet may not be our honor at all times in this country, but we want to make this a particular example in the Bahamas that we recognize our own and that we support our own. That's my message, actually.
And so as we wind down on this consultant day, June 2nd, 2022, we want all persons under the sound of our voice to be cognizant, to be aware that we are consultants. We are here in the Bahamas. We have a grouping. We certainly have some work to do in making that grouping more prominent, but I know, even though I asked the question, I know that in the background there are discussions and there are rumblings as to how that will be achieved, and certainly look forward to see that on the front burner, before the end of the year, something is out there. But, you know, as we go through this day, I want all the persons out there, whether you're a business owner, whether you are part of the policymaking class, whether you are an individual who is an influencer, remember, we are also here to contribute to the proper development of our clients' businesses, to the growth and development of their operations, so helping them to do things and to make changes and to shift the thinking so that things can go optimally or can move optimally. That's our role. That's where we come in. We're enablers and facilitators, making things happen so that companies can operate optimally and therefore profitably and therefore contribute to the overall growth and development of the country. And so, you know, we are kind of, you know, shouting it out from the mountaintop. Don't forget us. But of course, we know we have a role to play, and we are going to do what is necessary to put before the right places, to put into the public square, to put into the psyche of the country that we are present and the need for us to be embraced. I did say final word, but you want a final one? Give me a final
my brother, one. All I can say is that you are a champion of the cause. The heart is the right place. And I'll say this as well, too, is that I will take that step. I'll take that renewed step to make certain that I leave this Bahamas space in terms of our particular chapter in a better space than it was, right? I think I've done a lot of the region. I know I have. And looking back, I reflect that the last thing before was us hosting the Global Management Consultant Conference right here in Nassau.
Yes.
Right after that big-time hurricane that devastated the entire country as such, right? Mm-hmm. We held our heads up high. Our colleagues recognized the strength and our innovative thinking here as such. And we did it. If we did that, we could certainly do what we're talking about right now.
Yes.
And I'm committed as well. Thank you, my brother. And keep it the good works, man. You certainly appreciate it. And you're a good man.
All right, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Donald DeMerritt. He is the immediate past president of the Caribbean Institute of Management Consultants. And we want to celebrate all consultants today, whatever form you're doing it in. Today is your day. Take a bow. This is your time. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. You're on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Don't move. Come right back.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care. For every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
The radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We were just having a good conversation with Donald DeMerritt, immediate past president of the Caribbean Institute of Management Consultants. And in the process, I had my phone blowing up and I heard from this individual. He calls himself Cool Ricky. So Cool Ricky, we will have a conversation, Arlington. He's hearing the advertisement, right? And he's calling and asking for food. So we have to figure out a way of how we can fix Cool Ricky situation, but we will be in contact. So let's make this shift. And 52, if you still listening, now is your time to call. If other persons are out there, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. So let's talk about some local happenings. I had something else prepared, but I think, maybe this is the way to go. So Prime Minister Honorable Brave Davis QC says, no magic bullet for inflation, but Davis says measures in new budget will help. Prime Minister Philip Davis begins the debate on the 2022-2023 budget presentation, budget yesterday. The thing about this particular headline, which I like, is the honesty in it. And it's something which I've said before and I've said many times. I've been interviewed and persons have asked me questions and I've responded as such. Or right here on the radio, I've made such a commentary. Or when I've written in the newspaper, anything that which I've published, I've said very, very clearly that government, government really, and I think I said this on radio just yesterday, that government really cannot solve inflation. It's an honest, true position. And we should accept it as that. Now, there are certain measures, and the ultimate measure is to take away all taxes, all fees, all anything paid on a particular good or service. The government can remove that and as a result make the service or good cheaper. So when the Prime Minister says, look, all of these things that we are doing is basically we are trying to, you know, do our best to make this better, to kind of blunt the impact of inflation, and there is no, as he says here, none of the measures is a magic bullet, but they will help. And he goes on to say we are moving in the right direction. Well, time will tell if we are moving in the right direction. But the first part of the statement is absolutely true. There's no magic bullet. The reductions will help. I heard somebody someplace says, well, you know, it's only a 5% reduction, but it's 100% reduction of all that was there because it moved it from 5% to free. And that matters. That's important. So we need to kind of start to look at where we are budget-wise, where we are economic-wise, where we are, you know, in this whole, as I think 52 says, in this whole paradigm, as he used to say, likes to say, where we are in this whole paradigm, and we need to accept some truths. There's some things that we can't do, but there are some things that we can do. The things that we can't do, we need to say we can't. The things that we can do, we need to do them to the extent that we can, as best as we can, and not sweep them under the table. Because sometimes what happens is that, you know, we kind of give the impression that we can do more than we can in certain areas. And in the areas where we can actually make fundamental changes, we kind of pretend that our hands are tied and we can't go any further. And this is not specific to any one administration. This is in evidence across all administration, depending on where the priority lies. So it's very, very important that, you know, a statement like this would be made, and it needs to be understood by all and sundry. Then on the flip side, the budget falls short, Thompson says. So East Grand Bahama MP Kwesi Thompson is indicating that the government budget misses the mark, falls woefully short, and ignore the targets set in the fiscal strategy report. Now, these are some important things which have been said. Now, to the extent that some things were laid out in the fiscal strategy report and there was a shift, there needs to be a conversation, because the fiscal strategy report is as part of the new transparency reforms are required by law, and there are some rules about, you know, setting out your targets and sticking with them. But he indicates that the budget falls woefully short. And then he goes on to say, I think it reads here, Thompson, the former Minister of State of Finance, lambasted the government decision to increase the budget for travel and wages and salary, but cut funding for social assistance and benefit. Now, you know, as politics would have it, as a person's on two different sides, you know, that is going to happen. The move from, I think, $10 to $14 million for traveling, travel is always an interesting and active line item. But in the grand scheme of things, this is the way I like to look, or I would want to look at this whole issue of travel. You could spend $20 million on travel and have absolutely nothing to show for it. Or you could spend $30 million, which is a bit more, and at the end of the day, you have reasonable things to show, or you have a significant amount of things to show. So in the first instance, I think we must benchmark not just the fact that persons are moving from point A, usually mean out of the Bahamas, and they're going someplace. they should not be just traveling for the experience so that I'm going to a new country. I've never been here before, so I'm going to do this on the government dole. No, if we are traveling for productive reasons, and if those productive reasons are yielding benefit, all of them won't. Some of them will build relationships. Some of them will move to a particular point. But if there is value emerging out of this, then certainly that is the basis on which we should judge it. But of course, I will not diminish the Member of Parliament's point, that the larger point is simply this. You know, if we're going to be in a constraint, if we're going to have to kind of, you know, watch what we spend in certain areas, then we need to be mindful and be ready to justify and rationalize movements like these. So when you move from 10 to 14, almost a 50% or 40% increase, then you know that questions are going to be asked. So we have to pay attention to those things. Now, as the budget gets debated by its segments, the sectoral debate, more and more information is coming to the fore, and we are developing better understanding of exactly what the various ministers have planned for their various entities, various ministries. The one thing that we want to kind of lend our voice to is the need to keep this trajectory, this deficit, which has been projected as a decline. We have to work very, very hard, very, very hard to ensure that at least the trajectory is maintained so that the budget next year, the deficit next year is smaller than the one this year and so on and so forth until we get to that place where we have that projected surplus. Whether that will materialize or not, we do not know. There are too many things, there are too many uncertainties for us to get way out to 2025, but that is the plan. And planning is important. Setting targets is important. We say, okay, here is where we want to be in 3 years. And so that is important. Today I had the pleasure and the privilege of speaking at a Rotary Club. And they asked me to speak on debt and the ways to tackle that. So I spoke a little bit about, you know, where we are, how much debt we have, the impact of the deficit, and so on and so forth. And someone who was there, you know, took a short video and posted it, and the headline said, "Grim Times Ahead." And this is one of the things which I spoke to yesterday. Because oftentimes, we have to be very, very careful how we interpret information. Now, speaking to an issue and highlighting the risk associated with that issue does not automatically translate to grim times ahead. It says we have to be cautious, we have to be careful, we have to be pointed, we have to be productive, we have to be sure that we put in the work necessary, because this thing which we have outlined as being desirable of achieving carries these risks with it. So sometimes, even in our speaking, we are not often as clear as we would want to be, but I would hope that the message to be taken away is similar to that of the statements made by Moody's, which some people have totally interpreted, in my view, totally wrong. Because they're saying that Moody is pessimistic about the future of the Bahamas and the outcomes. The truth is, Moody is not totally pessimistic. Moody is saying that you put some things out, but there are certain risks attached and associated. We have some caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. You're on The Essentials.
Good afternoon, Mr. Edward.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm okay, sir. Your handle today is you're the Shadow Minister of Economic Affairs for the Foreign National Movement.
That's who I am.
Yes, sir. From yesterday, trying to call you, and you were not even answering. I mean, you say that lines are open. Do you have anything in the call? I'm knocking, right?
No. I can't take the call. Yesterday was a little bit
busy.
Challenging because I was doing the show remotely.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead. Let me hear what you have to say to the Shadow Minister.
Well, listening. I call all the time. I ain't knocking you, right? But
every single time you call, you knock me. So yeah, go ahead.
Let's keep it real, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like our budget is your budget, and I don't know who your mentor is. You mentioned your mentor, and I always wanted to ask you that, but I think you never asked me who's your mentor. You mentioned it. I was in the COVID period. You said your mentor. Who's your mentor? You didn't never say who's your mentor. But I have an idea who's your mentor.
I say who my mentor is?
You have a mentor in the Bahamas.
Mentor. The only person I have identified as a mentor in the Bahamas, kind of openly, is Dr. Miles Monroe. And
he's
dead and gone. Who?
I thought that was lying. I always say it was lying.
You know, Shivaga Ling is my friend. And he's someone who I have respect for. I wouldn't run away from the idea that he's a mentor, because I see mentorship differently than others. It don't have to be a case where you say, I am your mentor. I can sit and listen to you be mentored by you.
Yeah, but would you just take, like say, one of his elk, what he say has to be gospel, and, well, because...
No, absolutely not. I do not take anything from anybody as gospel. I listen to Shivaga Ling in many instances, and there are instances where I disagree with the way he puts certain things. I may agree with the fundamentals, and some things he know way more than me, and so I have to defer to that. But I do not take anything anyone say for gospel just like that. Absolutely not. Sir. Nobody.
Hey, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah, go ahead.
I respect you highly for being a man who would like I say, you when you hold your talk show, even though I always say with this different tongue and thing, and but you're a decent somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Even though you have a different accent from all of us, right?
Yeah, my accent don't mean nothing, man. I can talk like Bohemians, you know.
Yes, sir, but Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
What I'm telling you is right with respect, right?
Yeah, man.
You're a decent human being. I appreciate that, right? You are an individual, and I'm a Bahamian, and you're a Jamaican, right? But I mean, like, not you were born in Jamaica, right? And in the Bahamas, right? And I listen to you, right? And sometimes it ate me, right? But you know, I respect you, sir.
Uh-huh.
I respect you for the mere fact that you're a man. If someone calls you a show, you are going to talk with them.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to be decent enough to listen to what they have to say. If you disagree, you know, you whatever it is, you move on as a man. But you know what? I ain't telling you no lie, Mr. Edwards. I've been calling talk shows long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And talk shows right now, it's almost pitiful for the mere fact that we have a multiplicity of talk shows, and the most talk shows are on Guardian Radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? One minute, I ain't telling you no lie, right? Because Guardian Radio is the newest entity, right? And I worked for the Guardian when I graduated from CC Sweeting, all right? Okay? And I worked for NASA Guardian for 1 year, and I worked in the Department of that's from compository layout and design, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I left the Guardian, I was regarded as highly by people inside the NASA Guardian for years, okay? But the thing about it was ironic, right? What is ironic to me is that for me being, knowing what the NASA Guardian was, with knowing what the NASA Guardian is today, a news entity that can say anything about anybody in this country, right? As long as it's, you know, not to say defame or whatever, right? But my irony is that the very place that can talk about every single thing in this country, anybody in this country, we as Bahamians, we can't even ask any questions about anything inside the NASA Guardian, get hung up on like an animal. Do you think that's right, sir?
Well, you know, I can only speak to what I do here.
I know you're not for that one, right? But one day something.
No, I don't get into that.
A big one, sir?
Yeah.
That's a bad precedent, because you know what? How is it possible? And what is this institution that can talk anything about Bahamian? Anything. Any Bahamian. And you know, and at the end of the day, no Bahamian can call in to ask anything about anything what happened in the National Guardian, any of the staff, any of the persons who were disabled, talk show hosts or anything, who just get unceremoniously fired or whatever. You can't even ask the question. Another thing, in closing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing. You know, the NASA Guardian talks about Bahamian, anything, any blame, anything. But the key word when you want to get hang up on in NASA Guardian is to say anything about Haitian. And to me, as a behemoth, you know what? This NASA guardian, but that's the way Paul Gris had. I said, look at the NASA guardian highly, because that's the way there. And what it reached to today. I mean, it's different owners and everything, right?
You know, I don't know if you're being totally fair.
It ain't only for me, you know.
No.
I know a lot of people who used to call a long time ago, still call, and who feel the same way that I feel.
Okay, and we have some other callers, and we're coming to you shortly. No, don't go. I just want to make this last point to you. You may be taking one or two responses.
Listen to me.
Go ahead.
When you have management that tells staff, look here, you can only this, you can only that, or else, you know what, we cut you off. And you're nobody.
Okay.
Only when you're in the garden, you're somebody.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your contribution. Have a great evening. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian Radio. I hope you're not going to take me through the ringer like that gentleman did just now. He always does anyway. I always enjoy engaging with him nonetheless.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
You know, I agree with the last caller, you know. From you not supporting their sentiments or their capitalist program, they're ready to cut you off. And those who brand those in their sentiments, they run on forever. And I respect you for the same reason the other guy, you give us a chance. And people like Erin Green, right, she only get 1 hour, you know, and she's the only progressive on that, you know what I mean, on that radio. Why they only give her 1 hour? And that 1 hour, they make some commercial money off of some advertising money off of with these guests.
Radio is a business, you know, and so they have
to. But give this woman, this is a woman who creates a balance. They need to give her 2 hours.
Well, that's a management decision, obviously.
Right.
I think at some point, I
want to
address,
you know, this travel thing first.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, like government, what governments do is to our embassies, right, with trade commissions. You know, and the experts, you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, and the experts will be the one, if the policy, the government is to attract foreign directors or bring in foreign directors, that would be the mission of this office within the embassy. How could you pronounce that you're traveling on a trade mission and then you expect whoever you're traveling to be honest with you? They're going to be set up and put on a show for you. You know, and see, the ministers travel for ceremonial purposes, not to do any real work in terms of technical work. That's for the technocrats, you know. And then another thing, which what I want to address as well is, you know, this morning we had a show, they had a show with the livable wage. And, you know, they said to me, said in the show, that well, these females, they need their lifestyle, they spend money on their hair, right? Then one says, well, a guy says, the young men, they drink rum and smoke dope is why they, you understand me, they're not surviving. But how if these people do away with all of these vices? How miraculously that these people wages become livable? I mean, you know what I'm saying, to livable wage standard.
Yeah.
Just because they put away their vices or not spend money on their hair to look attractive.
You
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's an argument. I didn't hear the show, but it's an argument that I don't buy.
Right.
Let me make this point. If you do an assessment, and we're talking about grown-ups now, we're talking about individuals who have a right of self-determination. If you do an assessment and you determine that the wage for, across the board to be comfortable is $200. Let's use that as an example. You should not then turn around and make any argument about how that individual uses the money. The only question on the table is whether or not the $200 meet the criteria laid out, yes or no.
That's the problem.
We have to be very careful. We have to be very careful in social commentary. How we define, you know, I'm not supporting anybody taking their money to buy drugs and all of that sort of thing, right?
You know, once you're going to declare that you're giving them this money that you know what I'm saying, that says that they need.
Yeah, we need to be careful how we define certain persons and how they use it. Because here's what I mean. An individual who is affluent and have millions of dollars, right? you know, have no issue dragging shoes through the middle of the town and going into some place. Because guess what? He turns up at a certain place and he will not be thrown out. Yeah?
Right.
An individual who is otherwise have to put themselves together, have to go over and above for somebody to even look at them. And so you have to be careful because sometimes you're not comparing apples with apples. You get what I mean?
Some of them can't get a job unless they look a certain way.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Nice hair, nicely done, and the
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah. We need to be sensitive
to that. I'm a squall of Queens College, right? And, you know, this argument came, or at least this debate came about, you know, this one made he have a fishing boat, and he have these fishermen that live in the inner city and in one particular street, and then he says they make like $50,000 to $70,000 per annum, but they live in a shack. So then listen, you know what I'm saying? That they live in squall, and they fill up their trucks with cases of beer. And in other words, this, and then they say, well, this is an excuse not to pay a livable wage. What does that have to do with the blue collar work in construction, yeah, who don't have a livable wage?
Yeah, but for every one of those individuals that they would talk about, right, there is a single mother who is working $210 per week, who is not making those choices, who is doing all of the right things and just can't make things meet, right? And I think we have to be careful how we generalize in these discussions because, you know, the guy who can make $70,000 and decide, well, I'm going to live in a shack and this is how I'm going to operate, he's an outlier. For the most part, most persons are not like that.
Right.
You know, we have to be careful. And I think, you know, these type of a discussion where it comes to people's salary and person's state of living, you know, carries with it a level of sensitivity, and it requires persons who, I think it demands of persons who are making commentary in this regard to display the level of awareness and sensibilities.
People, leading people in the media is guilty of this behavior.
Uh-huh.
You know, I see trade unionists do the same thing. You know, they say, the trade unionists said that, well, you know, we can start at a particular wage, say $150, and ask the people skills lift, their salary should lift. That has nothing skills level has nothing to do with a livable wage.
No.
You understand what I'm saying?
But you also have to accept that this concept of a livable wage is a difficult one. It's
yes, it is. I'm sure. Yeah. You know, but let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Let's have people on the other side of the debate.
I agree.
The problem is we don't have anybody on the other side of the debate in the media. Not even the social media. Nobody. Where are they?
I totally agree because, you know, one of the things which irks me sometimes, Carla, is when I listen to individuals who I consider to be well off, right? And they speak from a place of sometimes, I don't even know if they're conscious of it, but they speak from a place of unknowing. And the pronouncement that they make, and I want to believe that they don't intend it to be, but the pronouncements at the end of the day come across as being, you know, sometimes selfish, sometimes being uncaring, because they don't have a full appreciation of those other persons. You know, individual will tell you, well, I grew up, challenged. But when you go back and you look at their lives, they weren't really challenged like some of these individuals are. And
but
so,
some of them are one-off. Many of them are one-offs.
Exactly. And we need to be very, very careful and be very conscious of the fact that we have to be sensitive when we're talking about people's lives. They're out there listening to you,
They seem to believe that these people believe what they're saying, but I'm telling you, they don't.
Yeah.
Because the roads I travel, the people that hear me, they know my voice.
Yeah.
And they always tell me, I hear you. You know what I'm saying? They appreciate what I do for them, but I'm all alone.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
I'm sure you're not all alone. I think there's some other persons out there.
There are very few of us.
Well, you know, where one or two are gathered, then great things can happen.
You know what I want to see? You see that same gentleman, 52?
Yeah.
I would love to see him take the social, take, you know what I'm saying? Take a social, the same thing he do with science. I want him to do some social advocacy.
Yeah, it's 52.
You know what I'm saying? He agrees with you know what I'm saying. He is progressive, but he won't do it.
You know,
I don't know why.
You know, 52 have a problem, right? I told him before. 52 is very impatient. He reads a lot, he knows a lot, but he's very impatient. He will come and he will start his discussion, and someplace in that discussion, he actually gets upset and says, "Hey, I gone, man. I can't bother with you." But you know, I would agree with you that if he was to take on, based on his seemingly discipline in reading and researching, if he was to take on certain social issues, he could make a great contribution to the country.
We need people like him who is intelligent and who, you know what I'm saying, who has vast compete. This man is a genius. You understand? We need leaders like them. We need the academics. You know what I'm saying? Who are socially aware, who, you know, who is willing to advocate for the social well-being of the unionized workers. See, that's the problem in this Bahamas, you know, because the middle class is unionized, right? Everybody's unionized, but the poor laborers. You see, and in many instances, these same people who are unionized are the employers of these poor workers who they won't advocate. You know what I'm saying? We have no union. These folks have no union, yeah, and that's the issue.
But, can I make a point?
Thanks for allowing me. Give me this opportunity.
Yeah, before you go, I want to make a point to you, as you indicate to in the direction of 52. Now, I listen to you. I hear you on different radio programs. One of the things I think that if you want to be more impactful, right, you have to repackage your sentiments. Too often I hear you come and you say the exact same thing over and over in the exact same way. But there has to be some movement in your thoughts. There have to be some movement in your ideas. You have to bring more to the discussion other than the same thing you said yesterday or on the show just before. Because other persons are listening to them. And as a result of that, they may kind of discount what you're saying. So you too have some work to do. I think you have some work to do.
I realize that.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a brother in London that works with me. He is a lawyer, you know, and he did management and accounts and the like.
Okay.
You see? But see, and the reason I do it is because I feel like I'm like the lone soldier. So these two particular issues, I have to stick on, like, the livable wage and progressive taxation. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
If I don't do it, you know, seems like there's nobody else.
That's fine. But if you keep telling me the same five words every day, I at some point in time tune you out. You have to say to people, okay, I spoke about this yesterday, but give me 5 minutes. Let me tell you some things. And you have to bring new things to the table each time. You can't keep saying the same thing over and over.
You know what happens? It's when I get on these shows, these talk shows, they cut me off. So
No, they don't. You see, and here is where I disagree with many callers who call and say people cut them off, right? A lot of times, you do not see yourself as having an obligation to do certain things so that people don't cut you off. You come and you do the same thing over and over, which irks the same people, and you expect them to listen to you. You have a role to play. You have to adjust to.
But don't you realize that my dialogue with you is different from the others because, in other words, I have more content because I have more time?
Yeah, you have more time, but you adjust because I force you to adjust. You do not realize that. I force you to adjust. The way you start your conversation with me often is not the way the conversation goes. Think about it.
You give me opportunity.
I give you opportunity, but I also do not allow you to go down certain rabbit holes. I kind of pull you back. I push you in a particular direction.
You know what I see?
Yes.
Because you will talk to me and support me 1 minute, and the other minute you have a guest that opposed me. So I
yeah,
well,
that's fine.
That commercial.
That's how life is. Thank you so much for your contribution. That's how life
Thank
is.
Thank you. That's the reality. Yeah. Thank you, man.
All right.
Appreciate you too much, man.
Yeah, man. We had a caller. We lost a person. Call right back because we were just wrapping up. We have a couple of minutes to go. Certainly would want to hear from you. 52, some persons called your name a couple of times, so I'm sure you want to call in and make your point. We heard from the Minister of Agriculture and Marine, Mr. Clay Sweetner, and it is saying that as the Davis administration seek to improve food security, Minister of Agriculture and Marine Resources and Family Island Affairs, Clay Sweetner, call the direct and supplemental support the government has allocated for farmers and fishermen a step in the right direction. During his contribution to the debate of the 2022-23 annual budget in the House of Assembly yesterday, Sweetin said the government is allocating $500,000 in direct support for farmers and providing additional indirect assistance program to help bolster food production in the country. Now, this is certainly one of my favorite areas. We have the caller back. Caller, go ahead. You're on The Essentials.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Edwards.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the brother. The brothers make some valiant points, you know.
Yes.
But, Mr. Edwards, I just listen to you, and I just listen to Chicago to learn, you know. I mean, me and Chicago might get the best along, but I know what to accept and what to reject. Now, that brother pushing for the poor is a very positive thing, right, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, but I'm looking at it from a global perspective and the deception of the financial pundits on the global sheep. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at, all right, let's say Fred Mitchell made a statement the other day, right? And Mr. Mitchell is very well-read, and I don't want people to take what he said as a joke, because what he said is true. When he talk about people say, when he stated the fact that the livable wage or whatever, right, et cetera, should be more, and he gave the reason for that, which I call inclusion. The more money they spend, which you call inclusion, versus exclusion. And so he was right on that point. And so I just wanted you to make an input on this, because I feel as if right now in the global construct, as far as the fiat currency and the way how the world is set up, reserve currency, etc. And I listened to some words from the World Economic Forum the other night. And so what I feel they're doing now is they're absorbing and taking up all the remaining wealth. They're sucking up all the remaining wealth. And then they're going to invent, or they said within 3 years, they'll have an Earth dollar. That's what Patrick Wood called it, an Earth dollar, but they call it a digital currency. And so this is now why they hoard with the Bitcoin. And so I guess they'll be coming after that as far as regulations. Now, when they finish sucking up the remaining wealth, they will have a digital paradigm, and they want to get rid of cash, because what happens is it's all about a control grid. And so cash and cashless is existing symbiotically now in harmony. So what I'm looking at is the fact that central banks are buying up gold reserves, right, mm-hmm. and storing gold. It is making me believe that something as drastic is about to happen, and the pundits know this. So I feel as if they're getting ready to crash the world economy. So this concept of borrowing, 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 this is a continual paradigm by the third world region that the IMF and these entities that set global currency rates, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of complex. You know, I into the science. I really don't have time to really follow this up. But this is where I see the world is headed. One of their slogans of the Great Reset is you will own nothing and be happy. And I know where the world is headed, you know. And it's the reason, see, the more money the government print, the more inflation. So this is nothing good could come out of this unless you invest in gold or lithium or silver or something, et cetera. This is how I see it, because the fiat currency, to me, the concept of reserve currency is a control, and the fiat currency, and what you call a quantitative easing, is catching up with the world now. This is how I see it, Mr. Edwards. It's frightening. And I know it's about that, but I'll just hang up and listen, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, and so, yeah, some things are going to change. You make some points, some things. I think this whole idea of there being this major conspiracy out there for persons to take over and do some things, I don't always believe in that sort of a thing. I'm 52. I believe that the world is moving in a direction which is different. The world is moving in a way as it always moved, where there are certain persons who are always trying to be in control, to be ahead of the game, to make the money. But, they're not really trying to, crush out me and you. They're after the bigger times. They're after the big place. But yes, some of the points you make, especially on the livable wage. Certainly, it's important. It's I think if we unfold this idea of a livable wage and put it in a question and ask the question of the minimum wage currently, can persons live comfortably or to, well, it wouldn't be comfortably, but can persons live with some level of dignity, as the Prime Minister has enunciated a number of times since he has taken office? He's talking about the dignity for the small man, financial inclusion or economic inclusion, economic being equitable from an economic perspective, lifting person up. The question is the minimum wage, as we know it, you know, is that livable? Can that allow persons to live with dignity? An individual who is earning that over a long period of time, will they be able to lift themselves up out of their circumstances? And I think if you ask those questions objectively and answer them, you know, honestly, the answer to that is going to be no. But the solution, I believe, don't just necessarily lie totally in changing the amount. The solution is not that you're going to give an individual an increase, even though that would be welcome, and in many instances needed because of where we live. I heard the Prime Minister said yesterday that the cost of living in the Bahamas is just too high. It's simply too high. So within the context of that acknowledgement, then obviously persons who have been making minimum wage up to now are just receiving amounts which is just too low and will not afford them the opportunity to, in a dignified way, move themselves forward. But the solution from where I sit is going to involve us looking at this in a more broad-based way. How do we empower individuals to be able to move themselves from the place where they are currently earning minimum wage, or even if you make the change to a livable wage, you can help more persons to move from that level to a higher level, to get into the middle class, to become more educated, to become greater experts or craftsmen, to earn a trade, to be able to lift themselves up and earn at a greater level. I think that's where the solution is. And the solution also lies in the extent to which we can grow the wider economy because, you know, like they say, you know, tide lifts all boats. So if the economy is booming, there is going to be a demand for workers. And that demand is going to be met by a very limited supply to the extent that we have an absolute amount of persons present in the country. So at some point in time, if the demand is high and very robust, it's going to put pressure. The supply is going to put pressure on that demand. And that is going to drive the cost of wages up. And so persons are going to benefit in that way. So, you know, growing the economy, having a more robust economy, but also putting persons, helping persons to be on a track where they can become better. If it is not the individual, maybe it is to enable their children. Because sometimes, you know, some of us are at a place where we believe that we are over the hill. You know, we cannot bother or be bothered with this whole idea of personal growth and development and, you know, lifting ourselves up. We're now more focused and arrested to the idea of how do we help our children, the next generation, to become better. So as long as there are programs and initiatives available, social support available, to make these individuals better, to be able to garner education, to be able to access the things from society, the exposure, the experience, which are going to take them to a different level, then all of a sudden, while some persons will still meander at that minimum wage or that livable wage level, you have more and more individuals in society who are moving into a different socioeconomic grouping, demographic, because they're earning more, they're doing better. They can move out of certain communities. They can expand into certain communities. They can better develop existing communities. They can take the house, which some people sometimes refer to, unfortunately, and I mean the reference, as shack. They can, you know, improve and renovate, and they can help to start a rejuvenation of certain communities, you know, historical communities. You know, it's, when you go to certain places and you look at the bones of some of this architecture, of the buildings and so on, you know, a rejuvenation would create a, such a new and vibrant environment where, so if we empower the people and start to get into their heads and change their psyche and cause there to be a shift in the mindset, then great and fantastic things can happen. So it is not limited to and should not be limited to this whole idea of giving a man some more money. It's kind of akin to, you know, teach a man to give a man a fish or teach him to fish. So the more persons can be empowered, the more persons can be educated, the more persons can be lifted up to use their own skills to move under their own weight away from where they currently sit, then the greater things are going to be achieved. But I believe, and let me end with this, I believe when we come to discussing the fate and the fortunes of poor people, use that broadly, persons who are struggling, persons who live at or below the poverty line, we have to be very serious about it. And we have to not make excuses which disparage them, as one of the caller suggested. I didn't hear it, but we have to be careful about that. Oftentimes, because of where we are, we do not fully appreciate where they are. We do not feel the pain. We do not see the challenges. We do not see the stress that they go through on a day-to-day basis. The young man that we hold up as being irresponsible may actually be making a decision which he's trading off his own progress for a supporting a family member that you don't see. Maybe this individual is a shut-in. We can't judge too much. We have to be very careful. Our job is to ensure, and by our I mean the country, our job is to ensure that we create the environment and opportunities for persons to grow and to develop. Now, some persons will take it up and some won't. It's their personal decision. We would hope that more would than those who don't. But at the end of the day, even when they have the opportunity and they don't, we have to remain sensitive. We have to remain responsible. We have to display a level of sensibility as we discuss, because everybody's not going to move at the same time. And the truth is, even some of those who may be lagging at the moment, in the moment that you have the discussion, they still moved. They can be moved by your own discussion, by your own pronouncement. So rather than be a little bit careless and knock them down, be sensitive and inspire, motivate, uplift, and encourage. I think that is always going to be a better way to go. And at the end of the day, if you can move one more, just one more, great things will be achieved, because that one more will be in a position to himself move others with him. You have been listening to The Essentials. You have been listening to The Reset. We had ourselves a wonderful conversation this evening, starting with Mr. Don Demerit. We talk about the Caribbean Institute of Chartered Management Consultants and the moves and the things which need to be done here in the Bahamas and the commitment to do those things. And then we got into a little bit of our economics and talk about some social issues. Certainly enjoy the conversation. Want you to join me next week when we do it again. So all that is left to do is to remind you that COVID is not over. Be careful. Play your part. Walk good. Take care. One love. And Ubuntu. And of course, I have to tell you, please, please, absolutely, never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials. Good night.